Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and this morning's conversation is with Lieutenant General Stephen Botell, Chief Information Officer in G6, the Department of the Army. Joining us in our conversation is Chuck Pro.
General Botell, we know that systems interoperability, particularly in the joint arena, is key for you. What are some of the ways that your office seeks to promote coordination within the Army and across the services?
Great question, Chuck. And that, as you know, has been a continuing issue. And although we do have interoperability issues, I think sometimes we don't give ourselves credit for all the things we should. Interoperability applies at many different levels. One is at the communications level or radio level. Will one radio talk to another? And so you have to solve that problem first to make sure they both talk to each other, be it on the same spectrum, same frequency. And so you solve that one first. And then you move to the next level and say, what do I want to pass between the two systems? And you'd have to talk about it, the application. What application am I going to have on one side versus an application on the other side? Are they designed to talk to each other? Are you trying to make a logistic system talk to an intelligence system? Obviously, they probably will not interoperate. So you have to map and architect what those systems are. And if you assume the applications are designed to talk to each other, then you have to take it to the next level and say, what messaging am I using? Am I using the same type of messaging across the network? Is one of them operating at a VMF bit-oriented message and the other at a character-oriented? So then when you line up and get that correct, then you say, what's in the message? And when you define what's in the message, you may both be operating on character-oriented message or a bit-oriented message, but then you need to get down to the data element level and align the data elements to make sure that you're passing data that you want to pass to the other application. And once you get the data passing back and forth, the next step in interoperability is how do you display it? In other words, are you displaying it on a graphic screen? Have you come to an agreement on the symbology? Is it MIL standard 2525B that I'm on? You're on FM 101-5. So you've got five or six different areas. We do pretty good at the radio level, not perfect, of being able to talk to each other or say one satellite system to the other. We do pretty good when you get down to some of the other levels. And where we usually run into issues is taking the applications over time and say, what is the thread we really want to do? What are you really trying to do from one end to the other? And yet we tend to throw it all into one basket and say we're not interoperable and try to solve all of those things when many of those things are already solved. And we need to get down at the application level and say, what is the thread of information we're trying to pass and what are we trying to do when we get there?
We understand that Information Technology Enterprise Solutions is one of the Army's recent efforts to centralize IT programs. How is ITES benefiting the Army?
ITES, as you probably know, is a primary. ITES 1 is run by Program Executive Officer EIS, Enterprise Information Services. Mr. Kevin Carroll runs that program. And ITES 1 is primarily a services or support-based contract. I think we've awarded so far probably about $157 million worth of work off that contract. But it provides services, everything from wide area network services to LAN services, IT support, programming database support, services type contract. Very powerful, allows anyone in the Army to come to a single place to get those type of services.
How will ITES 2 be different from the current ITES?
We're running out of overhead on ITES 1. We've almost awarded all the dollars we're allowed to award against that. ITES 2, we will increase the amount of overhead on that, or the top end, how much money we can put against that contract significantly.
Let me skip subjects here and talk about knowledge management. Could you describe the Army's vision for knowledge management?
I'd be glad to, Paul. First of all, you know, we all are collecting tremendous amounts of data. You know, you've got tremendous amount of data and information and documents probably on your computer and your hard drive today. And over time, that becomes not only megabytes and gigabytes, but pretty soon terabytes and petabytes. And believe it or not, we can talk in petabytes and information we have in storage today. And that information is pretty much static unless you have ways to access it and sort it and provide it to the right person at the right time. That's the process we're working right now. A combination of two things. All the information, and that information can be in the form of video, imagery, documents, messaging, translations of information that we've got around the world, open source. And how do you take all that information and how do you access the piece you want for one thing, to be able to make a decision in a rapid time in order to action something and have some successful event take place? When we get into Army knowledge management, it is really taking data and being able to massage that data and facilitate that data to get it to the right person someplace globally to make a decision. Several ways you can do that. One is you can just do searches on it like you do on Google or Yahoo or Excite or something else with a search engine. What you really need to be doing right now and what we're beginning to do and what the Department of Defense has directed, which I think is absolutely correct way to do it, is employ a lot of the XML standards to sort that information for content and intent. And as we start to convert that to XML, then you will start to really get the power that we're all after in this this knowledge-based world.
Tell us about tracking progress as you move towards those goals.
One is to be able to convert tremendous amounts of information into those protocols, into XML and those family of protocols, and that's going to be one part of it. The second piece is to start to apply that to the many, many, many hundreds, if not thousands, of systems that we have across the Army. Look, it's pretty easy to fix one system or mod one system or build one new system, but when you get large organizations like the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, the Marines, we have tens of thousands of applications. And so we need to parse those applications and decide which ones we want to attack first. We do have a requirement now that all new systems coming on board will use an XML backplane as part of that. And we broke it out by domains. We have warfighting domains. We have business domains. We have domain owners. And we are now assigning those domain owners responsibilities to modify those systems to operate within the XML environment. The larger environment is what we call the NCES environment, which is a network-centric enterprise services environment, which really the DISA organization is administering.
Let's take it down a level lower to the individual soldier. Could you tell us about Army Knowledge Online and how it affects their lives?
AKO, or Army Knowledge Online, which is, I think, one of the it is the largest portal in the Department of Defense, has several pieces to it. It has an unclassified portion, which we operate what we call the NIPRNet, or the unclassified for day-to-day operations within the Army. It has a piece of it is the SIPR, which is the secret side, which is primarily used by our intelligence community, our warfighter community, and our operations people. And then there's another side of it that are the websites that are open to the public. For the individual soldier and family, we have a tremendous amount of things that are going on. First of all, for any deployed soldier, we offer the opportunity for him to provide guest passwords and access and collaboration sites to his family and kids. So a deployed soldier today can go to one of the many internet cafes we have throughout the region in Southwest America or other places and actually exchange email and messaging and pictures and other things of their family and their kids and different events that take place within the family. That's on the personal side. On the professional side, if you go on Army Knowledge Online, like I do every morning and I boot that system, it provides me instant messaging to the people I work with around the world. But it also provides me role-based things. Today, when I boot on, it's got a series of stoplights and said, your physical is green. But you didn't take your flu shot, so it's amber or red. Go take your flu shot. You need a dental checkup, those types of things. So it is tied to many databases and systems throughout the nation. Effective in October will really be role-based. Not only will it tell me that I need to take my physical or I haven't taken my flu shot, but when you log into the system, it'll be role-based. It will not only know about my physical and my flu shot, but it will know what my role is in the Army and present information to me that's based upon who I am, what my age is, what my specialty is, what part of the world I work in, what my organization is, and start to provide role-based information for that individual. If he's up for promotion, it should come up and tell him, okay, you have an opportunity for promotion here. You need to do these types of things to get ready for it. Some of those are available today, but we're going pure role-based shortly. That gives us two things. It focuses information on the individual, but it also makes sure and ensures that he does not have access to information or she does not have access to information that she does not need or sensitive information that she should not have access to.
On the subject of knowledge management, can you describe the Army's Battle Command Knowledge System and how this evolving knowledge management system will affect the Army's ability to fight wars?
Yeah, the BCKS, or the Battle Command Knowledge System, is one of our very, very powerful stories. It's grown out of a couple young soldiers who decided that probably the big Army was not receptive enough and adaptive enough to do what they wanted to do. And they referred to it when I talked to them and said, you know, we built the website companycommander.com, which was the original website, as if a bunch of company commanders were sitting around on somebody's front porch talking about how they operate every day and what works and what doesn't work as a company commander. And these young soldiers decided that a great thing to do would be put it on a website. And they found that there was such a demand for that information and sharing of information for company commanders in Korea and Alaska and Hawaii and South America, in Europe. It was an overwhelming success, exponential growth. But they thought that because they did it on their own, with their own servers, that was the only way to do it. And we worked them for many years, and we've now rolled that into a bigger program. And that bigger program is BCKS. It does reside on Army Knowledge Online. It is now in the .mil domain. We're extremely pleased. And we not only have the companycommander.com on the mil domain now, we've expanded that to platoon sergeants and battalions. So that information is shared. And when you start sharing that information and hopefully tacit information, you have very, very powerful results. And so the young soldier who has an IED problem and a solution in Afghanistan when he was a company commander is now sharing that with a young soldier who's in Fort Riley and about to go to Afghanistan or Iraq. And so we're seeing all the sharing and collaboration of information. Very, very powerful, very useful in our business.
Fascinating, especially the sharing part. Are military IT programs different from IT programs for civilian agencies? We'll ask General Stephen Botell of the U.S. Army for his perspective when the Business of Government Hour continues.